Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Investing for Growth Second Edition by Terry Smith is a practical investment anthology built around a deliberately simple philosophy: buy good companies, do not overpay, and then do as little as possible. Smith is best known as the founder of Fundsmith and as the author of Accounting for Growth. And this book carries over his emphasis on financial statement discipline, cash generation, and skepticism toward fashionable market narratives. The second edition expands the original collection with investment writing from 2010 to 2025, giving readers a view of how Smith applies the same principles across different market environments. Rather than presenting a step-by-step trading system, the book argues for long-term ownership of durable businesses that can generate high returns on capital and reinvest cash intelligently. Its purpose is both instructional and corrective to explain what quality investing means, while challenging habits that can reduce investor returns, such as over-trading, chasing themes, or accepting complex products without scrutiny. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the central discipline of buying good companies. Not just cheap shares. Smith distinguishes quality investing from the more mechanical idea of buying statistically cheap stocks. The book emphasizes businesses that generate substantial cash, earn attractive returns on capital, and can reinvest profits without needing constant external financing. This matters because the long-term return from an equity investment is closely tied to the economics of the underlying business. A weak company bought cheaply may still destroy value if its profits are poor, its capital needs are heavy, or its management allocates cash badly. By contrast, a superior business can compound shareholder wealth over many years if it keeps earning high returns and redeploying cash productively. Smith, therefore, places business quality before market excitement. The investor is encouraged to look for companies with durable demand, resilient margins, and a record of surviving difficult periods rather than those merely benefiting from temporary enthusiasm. The approach is selective and exclusionary. Many listed companies do not meet the standard. This gives the book its distinctive focus. It is less concerned with predicting economic cycles and more concerned with identifying businesses whose economics reduce the need for prediction. Secondly, cash generation and capital allocation as the test of real business quality. A recurring theme in the book is that reported profit is not enough. Smith's background in accounting analysis shapes his insistence that investors should examine whether a company turns earnings into cash and whether management uses that cash. Sensibly, a business may appear profitable while consuming large amounts of capital, relying on acquisitions, or presenting flattering accounting measures. For Smith, genuine quality is visible in strong free cash flow, high returns on capital, and disciplined reinvestment. This framework also explains his suspicion of businesses that obscure their economics through complicated language, promotional metrics, or fashionable terminology. The book encourages readers to ask practical questions. Does the company need heavy reinvestment simply to stand still? Does it have pricing power? And does management create value when it deploys surplus cash? These questions move investing away from headline earnings and toward economic substance. The point is not to make accounting analysis unnecessarily technical, but to prevent investors from mistaking appearance for performance. In this respect, the book links everyday investment judgment with the forensic habits associated with Smith's earlier work on accounting quality. Thirdly, do not overpay and then allow compounding to work without interference. Smith's formula includes two constraints that are easy to state but difficult to practice: do not overpay and do nothing. The first prevents quality investing from becoming indiscriminate enthusiasm. Even a strong company can produce poor investor returns if bought at a valuation that already assumes unrealistic growth. Smith therefore treats valuation as a necessary guardrail, not as the sole source of opportunity. The second constraint, inaction, is central to the compounding logic of the book. If the investor has identified a genuinely superior business and paid a reasonable price, frequent trading can interrupt the benefits of long-term ownership through costs, taxes, timing errors, and emotional reactions to market noise. The argument is not that investors should ignore deterioration in business quality, but that they should avoid confusing price volatility with fundamental change. This makes patience an analytical discipline rather than a passive attitude. Smith's approach asks investors to spend more effort on the initial selection of companies and less effort trying to forecast short-term market moves. The result is an investment style that is concentrated, patient, and deliberately resistant to activity for its own sake. Fourthly, skepticism toward buybacks, ETFs, ESG labels, and other market conveniences. One of the book's sharper contributions is its challenge to widely accepted investment practices. Smith argues that share buybacks are not automatically beneficial. They create value only when shares are repurchased below intrinsic value and when the company has no better use for capital. If management buys back expensive shares or uses repurchases to flatter per-share metrics, shareholders may be harmed rather than helped. He also raises concerns about exchange-traded funds, particularly more complex or leveraged forms, because they can give investors an impression of simplicity while introducing structural risks and encouraging theme chasing. His criticism of ESG products follows a similar pattern. The problem, as presented in the book, is not the idea that investors should care about ethics or sustainability, but that packaged funds and labels may not reliably deliver what their names imply. These arguments fit the broader philosophy investors should understand what they own, why they own it, and how value is created. Smith's skepticism is sometimes blunt, and some readers may find it too categorical. Nevertheless, it serves an important function by forcing scrutiny of products and practices that are often marketed as self-evidently prudent. Lastly, an anthology format that applies one philosophy across changing markets. Because Investing for Growth is an anthology of essays and letters rather than a conventional textbook. Its structure shows an investment philosophy being applied repeatedly over time. The second edition extends the coverage through more recent market conditions, allowing readers to see how Smith's principles are used during different phases of enthusiasm, uncertainty, and debate. This format gives the book a practical advantage. The ideas are not presented only as abstract rules, but as responses to real investment controversies and recurring market temptations. The tone is direct, sometimes polemical, and often aimed at simplifying issues that the financial industry tends to complicate. Readers encounter discussions ranging from quality businesses and accounting discipline to analogies, such as endurance in the Tour de France, all used to reinforce the same underlying point about discipline and patience. The limitation of this format is that it can feel less systematic than a manual organized around a single sequential framework. Its strength is that repetition across contexts makes the core philosophy memorable and testable. The reader sees how a small number of principles can guide many separate investment judgments. In conclusion, Investing for Growth Second Edition is best suited to individual investors, long-term equity owners, and professionals who want a clear articulation of quality investing rather than a trading method. It will be especially useful for readers who already understand basic investing concepts but want a sharper framework for judging business quality, cash generation, valuation discipline, and management capital allocation. The practical benefit is a checklist-like way of thinking identified durable companies. Examine whether profits convert into cash, avoid excessive prices, and resist unnecessary action. The intellectual benefit is the book's challenge to financial industry habits that often pass as common sense, including uncritical enthusiasm for buybacks, thematic funds, complex ETFs, or loosely defined ESG products, compared with many investment books. It stands out because it combines plain language with accounting-informed skepticism, and because it is anchored in the lived perspective of a high-profile fund manager applying a consistent philosophy over many years. It is not a broad survey of every investment style, nor is it likely to satisfy readers seeking speculative growth stories or frequent portfolio activity. Its value lies in its disciplined narrowness. It explains why owning a small number of exceptional businesses for a long time can be a rational and demanding strategy. Not a simplistic shortcut. If you would like to support Terry Smith, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.